from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, this would be the day that marks the beginning of year 25 of this broadcast. What a frightening idea that is. What an absolutely appalling notion. And yet it's true. But the truth can be appalling, can't it? Now, this will be maybe the start of another copyrighted feature. Who knows? Certainly not our copyright lawyers. A feature called Did I Miss It? Did I miss where somebody announced that our ports were now totally secure from possible terrorism threat? Did I miss that? Because this week on Friday, as a matter of fact, the Bush administration announced it plans to slash counterterrorism funding for police, firefighters, and rescue departments across the country by more than half next year, according to the Associated Press. Administration doesn't think that the Homeland Security's $23 billion worth of aid to states and local governments so far has been well spent, and thinks the nation's highest risk cities have largely satisfied their security needs. Among the parts being slashed, the plan calls for outright elimination of programs for port security and transit security. We're good. I missed it, but we're good. We're cool. Of course, the Democrats are ticked off about it, but even a Republican, Representative Peter King, congressman from New York, said, "This would be a very grave mistake, and I will do all I can to stop it." All he can means issuing that press release. So I guess I missed that. I know I missed where FEMA tested the FEMA trailers for the formaldehyde fumes, because they haven't done it yet. Still, now, not having done it. It is December. Hey, happy December to you. And so probably all the people living in those trailers have opened the windows by now because it's not hot and they don't have the air conditioning on anymore. And another month or two, those trailers will be fully vented. Then you go test, see? Then you get some nice results. And did I miss the change in Pentagon policy? In the last few weeks, ladies and gentlemen, you and I have heard stories from the administration and its supporters about the success of the surge. And one of the arguments advanced for the success of the surge is that Iraqi civilian casualties have gone down, way down. Did I miss where the Pentagon started counting them? Dateline, April 16th, 2003. The Pentagon says it has no plans to determine how many Iraqi civilians may have been killed or injured or suffered property damage as a result of U.S. military operations in Iraq. And it was Tommy Franks, the first head of our thing over there, who said, quote, "We don't do body counts." So I guess I missed where they decided, yes, we do, because now the numbers are good. So now we'll count them or announce them or whatever it is we're doing. And just clearing the table at the beginning of year 25, when the administration decided that the country that had invaded its neighbor, that had weapons of mass destruction, and that harbored terrorists was Iraq and not Pakistan. We invaded Iraq and made Pakistan our ally. We know what's happened in Iraq, or we think we do. Now Fred Kagan of the American Enterprise Institute, according to the British newspaper The Guardian, is concocting a set of contingency plans for securing Pakistan's nukes in the event that things go bluey over there, including maybe sending American troops. Never too late. And the money sentence in the article is, quote, "The political and security crises in Pakistan have led the Bush administration to conclude that Pakistan has become a more dangerous place than it was before Musharraf took over in October 1999. I guess I didn't miss that. Hello, welcome to the show.
Life's been good to me. I thank the good Lord for the way things are. Good friends and family. Well, God is good as good can be. I've had an excellent time so far. There's only one thing that I fear. I've been up so long on this lucky star.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer. Not John Shearer, not the inventor of the video professor, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And I have my eye peeled, ladies and gentlemen, for General Musharraf's uniform. He took it off this week. It should be on eBay very, very soon, and we'll start the bidding just as soon as it is. I can't wait for that. He's now just President Musharraf, no longer General President Musharraf. But maybe he'll re-enlist, start all over again, be private president. And now a feature too long absent from the broadcast, making its triumphant return at the beginning of year 25. Tales of Airport Security. This one's from Brandon in Mission Viejo, which is not so Viejo, really. Don't be fooled. Actually pretty nuevo when you take a look at it. He writes, Dear Harry, my girlfriend and I were traveling from Orange County, California to Atlanta to visit her family Thanksgiving. Because Orange County has such a small airport and it's usually a 5-minute walk from the ticket counter to any gate, we We plan on getting there only 45 minutes before our flight, which has always been plenty of time. On every other occasion, I flew from John Wayne Airport. Our flight for Delta was scheduled to leave at 7:50 a.m. We arrived on time, according to the parking ticket. There were three people in line ahead of us, so there wasn't much worry. Despite the fact that the woman ahead of us, who was also on our flight, spent about 10 minutes chatting with the ticketing agent. When we stepped up at 7:20, we were informed by the self-check-in that we were not allowed to get our boarding passes. We asked why, and were told it was due to a new federal policy, which we had not been informed of on our itinerary or on any signs up until this moment. The new policy prohibits anyone from checking in less than 30 minutes before their flight as a security measure. I began making arrangements to rebook the flight while my girlfriend told the agent that we were here more than 30 minutes ahead of time, but were waiting for one of their staff to become available. The attendant responded there was nothing they could do to waive the $100 reticketing fee, because it was a federal security policy and not a company policy. And that if we wanted to get faster service, we should have used the ticketing phones when we arrived, which she indicated as being a counter on the other side of the room, completely obscured by a rack of brochures. The rebooking agent told me that to get on the next available flight at 11, I'd have to come back at 8, when they began taking reservations due to the seats only being available 3 hours before flight time. When I got back in line at 7:50, I was told they had already sold those seats and that the next flight I could get was at 1 that afternoon. Brandon had a good day at John Wayne Airport. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. I actually myself ran into the 30-minute thing when I was trying to fly back from San Francisco to Los Angeles. But, of course, they have much more frequent flights on that route. But, yes, it's a new security thing. Less than 30 minutes. Get out of here. You're a terrorist. I'm sure it's a good idea. I'm sure it's well thought out and well considered, as well thought out as the fact that our ports are now totally safe. You heard that, right? At the beginning of this broadcast? Just checking, you know. Because we're entering year 25, and now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
First, from Aaron Burnett of CNBC, who called President Bush the monkey in the middle when doing a live commentary on MSNBC's Morning Joe, describing video of him arriving with some guests at the Annapolis Middle East Conference. Here's Aaron Burnett. No, that's so not Aaron Burnett.
You know, earlier this week, I was on MSNBC on Morning Joe, and I made a bad attempt at humor, Chris. I was talking about some world leaders. They did, of course, include our president. I said something stupid. I just want to make sure I apologize if I offended anyone. I do have the utmost respect for the president. I hope he has a great weekend. And, Chris, I hope you do, too.
I'm not Chris, but thank you, Aaron Burnett. And the cable news apologies continue. Venezuela's volcanic president Hugo Chavez has claimed for years that people were trying to kill him without much evidence. Now, thanks to CNN, he finally has some proof. CNN en Español, the Spanish language version of the network, mistakenly ran a photograph of Chavez this Tuesday next to a caption that read, "Who killed him?" It aired for only a few seconds, but Chavez noticed it. "It's weird and it needs investigation," he said on Venezuelan television Wednesday. He also called on his attorney general to launch a probe into the incident. CNN apologized and blamed the snafu on a technical mix-up. The caption referred to a story about the Washington Redskins football star, Sean Taylor.
Heroes, heroes, heroes.
More television apologies. Television talk show host Montel Williams threatened to find and blow up the homes of three Savannah Morning News reporters this week while he was in Savannah, Georgia, promoting free prescriptions for poor people. That bus exists. I thought they made up that bus. The incident took place at the Westin Savannah Harbor after an event in Johnson Square for the Partnership for Prescription Assistance's Help Is Here Express. Before the event, Montel took exception to a question asked by a high school intern for the newspaper and abruptly ended a videotaped interview. Later, the intern and another intern and a web producer for the newspaper went to the hotel for an unrelated assignment featuring gingerbread houses. Williams and his bodyguard were there, too. As we were preparing to film, Montel walked up with his bodyguard and got in the intern's face, pointing his finger and telling her, "Don't look at me like that. Do you know who I am? I'm a big star, and I can look you up, find where you live, and blow you up." At this time, he was randomly pointing at all of us, said web producer Joseph Cosi. The two interns corroborated the statement. Late Friday, Williams issued a statement through a representative of his TV program. That's ballsy. Quote, "I apologize for the misunderstanding," the statement read. "I mistakenly thought the reporter and photographer in question were at the hotel to confront me about some earlier comments. I was wrong, and I apologize for my overreaction." Maybe he needs some prescription assistance. Send the bus. The Chinese manufacturer of a toy that was found to contain a powerful chemical that metabolizes into a potent date rape drug, when consumed, has issued an apology. The toys sold under the name Aquadots in North America and Bindies in Australia, that should be the tip-off, included beads made by Hong Kong's JSSY Limited. Spin Master Limited has recalled about 4.2 million Aquadots toys in North America. The incident has given Made in China brand a negative impact during the Christmas season, company director Liao Zhuang told reporters in Shenzhen. "I have to deeply apologize. The toys were coated with 1,4-butanediol. Just think of needy. Butanediol, which when ingested can cause unconsciousness, seizures, drowsiness, coma, and death." I saw a prescription drug which had as one of its side effects listed death. I wouldn't think of that as a side effect. I'd think of that as a front and center effect, but that's just me. Yahoo's checkout service for nearly 40,000 online merchants went on the fritz for nearly 11 hours this past Monday, so-called Cyber Monday. Yahoo described the problem as shoppers receiving an error message indicating system unavailable during the checkout process. The glitch not only threw off online shoppers, but also infuriated quite a few of the merchants. The company has since released an apology to merchants stating that, quote, "Yahoo's relationship with our merchants is extremely important to us and we value their loyalty." Now, to a series of apologies about the loss of, or the inadvertent loss of millions of data files on people in Britain. Here's Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, HMRC, found that or announced a couple weeks ago that the disks had, I think, 23 million people's data files on them, went missing, as they say. Well, yeah, 25 million people. A woman in Warwickshire, Manjit Mojaria, said she had received 7 apologies from the agency intended for other people and containing their personal information. When she informed the agency of the mistake, Ms. Mojaria said she was given the impression that, quote, she was not in the minority. Another woman in Banbury, Oxfordshire, was sent a letter containing personal information that was not hers. She said, quote, "Not only did they cock up the missing disks, they're also sending out families' personal data to other families," said a leader of the opposition. "The agency can't even apologize without breaking people's confidences." And a Worcester family, whose details were among those lost by the government in Britain, were astonished to receive their apology letter in an unsealed envelope. Alan and Trudy Oakman received the letter from Revenue and Customs. It contained Ms. Oakman's insurance number, child benefit number, name and address, all the personal information that was on the missing disks. The envelope was just tucked in, not sealed properly, Mr. Oakman said. Anyone could have opened it and had access to our personal information without us knowing. I just can't believe, in light of what the letter was apologizing for, that this could happen. A spokesman for Revenue and Customs apologized for the mistake and said it was an isolated incident. And his apology was unsealed. Ellen DeGeneres apologized on her talk show this week for calling Bachelor star Brad Womack. The Bachelor? Brad Womack? Hello? For calling him, a bar owner who hails from Austin, Texas, a jerk earlier in the week. I think she's still pining for the dog. Under pressure from users as well as advocacy groups, popular social networking website Facebook has decided to change the way its beacon advertising technology operates. The beacon technology was intended to tell a user's friends when they shopped online for books, music, and even rented a movie. Many users were aghast at this intrusion of privacy. MoveOn.org launched a petition urging Facebook users to protest. Facebook bowed to the pressure and decided that Beacon will be a strictly opt-in service. Users must grant permission for Beacon to scan their profiles. Facebook has now apologized for its action. We're sorry if we spoiled some of your holiday gift-giving plans, the post read. We're really trying to provide you with new meaningful ways to help you connect and share your information with your friends. They're also trying to find a way to monetize the whole deal. Arkansas State Senator Denny Altes issued an apology this week for racially charged remarks on immigration he made in an email made public the day before. In an email to former Fort Smith Mayor Bill Vines, Altes reportedly said, "We are being outpopulated by the blacks," and called for sending illegal immigrants home to their home countries. Altes told the Associated Press said he did not consider the remarks racist, but he said, "I apologize and I'm sorry if it hurt anyone's feelings. I'm sorry if it offended anyone." David Beckham, soccer star, remember him? He was going to be big in this country. Yeah, he was going to make the game big. He's not apologizing for that yet. But this week he honored a promise to a young cancer sufferer after security concerns had seemed to ruin her dream of meeting him in Sydney, Australia. 14-year-old Emma Byers, the first person to survive two consecutive bone marrow transplants at Children's Hospital Sydney, was due to welcome Beckham on a morning this week, but was left in tears when the star's minders insisted he was brought into the hotel via a back entrance and whisked to his room. But last night at Sydney Football's club game, the night after, with Queensland, Beckham took time to meet Emma in private and left the young girl beaming with delight. After he was told what happened, a contrite Beckham had used a press conference to apologize to the girl and other fans who had been with her and had promised to make amends. "I didn't even see any children when I arrived at the hotel this morning. I went in the back way," he said. "But that's not what I do or what I'm about, and I apologize to them." The City Council of Cardiff, Wales has formally apologized to 88-year-old Betty Davies after a street cleaner warned her against sweeping leaves off of her porch. She admitted she was at a loss for words when the street cleaner told her she could be fined after seeing her sweeping leaves from her porch in her home in Splott. Yes, there's a part of Cardiff, Wales called Splott. I'm sure they don't pronounce it that way. I'm sure they pronounce it Splying. The apology extended to Davis was after the street cleaner told the 88-year-old woman, "I'm giving you a warning this time." She said, "I went back inside and sat down and thought, what a blimmin' cheek. I'm 88, and although I can look after myself, I'm a pensioner and quite old." Local city councilor said the street cleaner was totally out of order. The council apologizes for the reported comments made to Betty Davis. The council would not fine people for sweeping leaves on the highway from the front of their home, even in Splott. Another Catholic apology makes our list this week. Cardinal Marc Ouillet of Quebec has apologized for the past sins of some Catholics in Quebec. Some have described it as risky but prophetic act of leadership. Others have called it a calculating political move in his battle against the mandatory ethics and religious culture course Quebec plans to impose on private and public schools next fall. Others say the apology did not go far enough. Ouillet, a couple weeks ago, writing as Archbishop of Quebec and Primate of Canada, He's a primate. So are we all. Issued an open letter to Quebec papers inviting Catholics to perform an act of repentance and reconciliation. He continued, I recognize that the narrow attitudes of certain Catholics prior to 1960 favored anti-Semitism, racism, indifference toward First Nations, i.e. Native Americans and Inuits, and discrimination against women and homosexuals. Yeah, that's all over. He continued, the behavior of Catholics and certain episcopal authorities with regards to the right to vote, access to work, and promotion of women hasn't always been up to par with society's needs or conform to the social doctrine of the Church. I also recognize that abuses of power and cover-ups have for many tarnished the image of the clergy and its moral authority. Youngsters were subject to sexual aggression by priests, he notes, and religious figures, causing great injury and traumatism. Traumatism. It's an ism. It's not just a trauma. It's a traumatism. Dr. Frederick Tobin this week gave an apology in the Federal Court of Australia for being in contempt of court by continually featuring Holocaust denial material on his Adelaide Institute website. He gave the apology during a contempt hearing of the federal court. It's a qualified apology. When the justice said his comments were inconsistent with a real apology, Dr. Tobin gave a full apology without embellishment and undertook to remove all Holocaust denial material from his website by December 5 and not to replace it. Japan's bad boy boxer Daiki Kameda launched his comeback bid by offering his first public apology for flagrant foul play during an October title match that shocked the Japanese public. He's become notorious for his aggressive bluster, but he bowed in front of the cameras in an unusual show of humility as he resumed training in the ring. I'm sorry for causing trouble, the 18-year-old told a news conference at his gym. I'd like to start again, not from point one, but zero. Fans, please give us support, he added. He kicked, choked, and repeatedly tackled World Boxing Council flyweight champion Daisuke Naito last month in a failed challenge. He shaved his flamboyant dyed hair to show repentance and visited Naito's home to offer a private apology. Let's have more public head shaving. What do you say? The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Thank you.
Senta, se acredita, tenta. Se tá frio, esquenta. Se tá fora, entra. Se pediu, aguenta. Se pediu, aguenta. Se sujou, cai fora. Se dá pé, namora. Tá doendo, chora. Tá caindo, escora. Não tá bom, melhora. Não tá bom, melhora. Se aperta, grita. Chato, agite. Se não tem crédito, se foi falta pit, se não é imite. Se é do mato, amance. Trabalhou, descanse. Se tem festa, dance. Se tá longe, alcance. Use sua chance. Use sua chance. Eu feliz requebre. Se venceu, celebre. Se tá velho, ao quebre. Corra atrás da lebre. Corra atrás da lebre. Se perdeu, procure. Se é seu, segure. Se tá mal, se cure. Se é verdade, jure. Quer saber, apure. Quer saber, apure. Se sobrou, congele. Se não vai, cantar. Se é inocente a pele, escravo se rebele, nunca se atropele. Se escreveu, remeta, engrossou, se meta. E quer dever, prometa, pra moldar, derreta, e não se submeta.
This is the show entering its 25th year of disservice to the community. And now, ladies and gentlemen, speaking of which, news of the warm, won't you? By the way, the station that quoted me as saying that no longer carries this broadcast. Just thought I'd point that out. Seattle's not a big college town, is it? Woodland birds that once flourished across England and Britain are vanishing, according to a new study. Popular species such as the nightingale, the lesser spotted woodpecker, and the wryneck have dwindled almost to the point where they would be classified as endangered. A study of bird populations studied them across 20 European countries. It reveals that some woodland bird numbers have been falling by up to 20% in the past two decades. A separate, smaller study suggested the situation is even worse in Britain, populations falling by more than 25%. Experts believe that changes in the management and type of woodland, combined with warming temperatures and climate change, have made it harder for many forest birds to find food and nesting sites. Researchers identified 11 species that had reached critical levels and are in need of urgent conservation. Richard Gregory of the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds warned that species such as the lesser spotted woodpecker and the wryneck are no longer breeding in the UK. These birds are in danger right across Europe. He says they're not just disappearing in the UK, but on a much wider scale. They are quite different birds, the 11 species, with different specialisms. So we've had traumatism and specialism today. My horizons have been broadened. The report appears in the scientific journal IBIS. Uses data from bird conservation charities and ecology centers across Europe. A third of the 90 forest birds examined have declined since the 1980s. Specialist birds, like the woodpeckers, have fallen by 18%. More common species, like the nightingale, by 13%. A second study by the British Trust for Ornithology reveals worst-hit areas in the UK. Chris Hewson of the British Trust for Ornithology says these declines are not just a random problem, but symptomatic of something far more widespread. Those woodpeckers are good eating. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. How's the justice system going for the detainees in Guantanamo? Good question, Harry. Glad you asked it. Defense lawyers preparing for the war crimes trial of a 21-year-old detainee. He was 15 when they brought him in. The defense lawyers have been ordered by a military judge not to tell their client or anyone else the identities of the witnesses against him. That's become known this week, according to the New York Times. The case of the detainee Omar Ahmed Khadr is being closely watched because it may be the first Guantanamo prosecution to go to trial. Maybe as soon as May. Defense lawyers say military prosecutors have sought similar orders to keep the names of witnesses secret in other cases before military commissions. The order says 3 weeks before the trial, prosecutors can abandon the secrecy protections or ask the judge to extend them. Prosecutors have also suggested they may ask the judge to bar all information, even identifying witnesses, from the trial. Wrote the prosecutors in a legal filing, quote, providing the witnesses' true identities will add nothing to their testimony, unquote. What, like credibility? Khadr is the only Canadian detainee at Guantanamo. He's charged with killing an American soldier, giving material support for terrorism and other offenses. The documents released by the Pentagon this week are nearly 700 pages of previously unavailable records of arguments and ruling in his case in recent months. It's a battle underway over how much information is to be revealed in public. Most of these arguments, by the way, didn't take place in open court, but rather via email, as did the judge's rulings. Khadr was 15 at the time. He was badly injured after a firefight in which an American Special Forces soldier was killed. In an email message to the judge and the prosecutors, an attorney for the defense noted it was argued it was notable that the entire discussion of whether witnesses would be permitted to shield their identities was being conducted without anyone in the public or press able to observe the arguments. It appears that the government is trying to keep the secrecy of the proceedings a secret. That is so wild. That is so complete. Some parts of the trials themselves will be conducted in closed courtrooms for discussion of classified evidence. Military officials say some witnesses might testify in open court behind a screen, or perhaps in disguise, or perhaps...
Yes, can I help you?
Yes, Sky Steele, I have a 10:15 appointment with...
Just sign in, please, and have a seat.
You got it. I have my resume and my glossies, if...
That's fine. We'll just put them in the shredder.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, welcome to the club.
Strike zone, man. Gotta be somewhere.
Yeah. What do you hear?
Well, my sister's cousin works at NBC. He says at least January.
Wow. I'm Corey.
Sky Steele. Did you get sides?
You'll get the script when you go into the room.
No, that's fine. You know, I'd like to prepare, you know, so that I can give, obviously, not a finished performance, but, you know, something with a little bit of polish to it. And
you'll get the script when you go into the room.
Got it. Thanks.
They're a little uptight here.
Hey, at least they're hiring.
We'll see.
Yeah. How long you been here?
20 minutes.
It's not bad. Delora Stone once kept me waiting for 2 hours. Then I walked in, and he said... You're all wrong. And I was that.
Yeah. Rough business.
You know anything about this gig? All my agent said was the part of witness.
Yeah. That's all I know.
Yeah. What is it? Stage? Film? I mean, you know, no sweat. I've done plenty of both. Never did the film adaptation of a part I created on stage, though. That would be a kick.
I think it's not film.
Okay. No. I hope they don't put my resume in the shredder before they notice all the dance experience I have, because I'm, you know better than anybody, probably. On stage, all movement is basically dance.
Yeah, yeah, that's what they say. What I've heard is that the auditions are for the role of actual witnesses.
Actual witnesses? You mean sort of like a reality TV-type deal, except...
Except not in TV, yeah.
Huh. Lucky this production's going now. How do they do it? What with the strike and all?
I hear these are real trials. They've been trying to get them started up for years.
So, just good timing, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope we're not up for the same part because, I don't want to blow my own horn too loudly here, but I don't normally even audition, so...
Oh, don't worry about it.
Well...
I'm just here to keep the actors company.
Sorry?
I'm just playing the role of a guy here for an audition. I never go in there.
Got it. Good idea, because if we were sitting here by ourselves just with the reception...
You can go in now, Mr. Steele.
Thank you. Thanks very much. You're not wearing a name tag or anything.
No, I'm not.
Well, nice to...
Welcome to the audition for trial number one. Mr. Steele?
Yes. You guys, in a booth?
Yes. We're on secure video connection from elsewhere.
Ah, because, I can't see you.
We can see you.
Cool. That's what counts. So, this is location work?
You could say that, yes.
Okay, because I have per diem...
You didn't get the pages.
That's right.
Good. You You'll just see the lines on the screen in your room.
All right.
Give them your best reading.
Oh, could I just take a moment to kind of make it my own?
Memorization is not required. Or allowed.
Oh, okay. Just cold reading, huh? Well, you know, that's how I got my speaking part in Independence Day. I'm the soldier who yells, "Don't shoot my horse." Actually, I improv the line. Originally, it was just...
I'll read your cue lines.
All right.
Can you tell us where you were on the evening of June 11th?
I was just outside... Is that Kabul? Kabul?
Kabul.
Anyway, that's where I was when I saw this young guy acting very suspiciously.
Do you see that young guy in the squad room today? Mr. Steele, don't you have the next line?
No, sorry, I was just looking around the courtroom before I...
Just say the line, please.
Yes, he's the fellow in the prison suit, shackles, and hood.
Thank you. Can you try it with just a little less melodrama to it?
Oh, I didn't think it was melodrama, just a little bit of dramatic intensity, but sure.
Just keep going.
Nah.
And when you say, very suspiciously, what was this young man doing?
He was engaged in terrorist-type activity.
And you saw this activity?
I did. You know, if you have any tape of the real witness character whose lines I'm doing, that would be just so great.
It would be great.
Mm.
Have you ever worked blindfolded, Mr. Steele?
Hmm. Interesting question. I'm trying to, I don't think so. I ride and I swim, though.
Thank you. You'll hear from us within 2 days.
I only do one callback, but... Great. Now, does this character just sit? Because I have tap, jazz, all sorts of...
If you're selected, a car will pick you up on Thursday morning.
Okay.
You should prepare to be out of town for at least 2 weeks.
Cool. All right, I'll call my cat sitter just in case. Hey, lovely almost meeting you.
Your participation in this audition indicates your approval of the non-disclosure agreement... and your waiver of any appeal in the event of a violation of that agreement.
Okay. Sounds cool. Thank you.
Next.
I dreamed I walked in heaven just the other night. There was so much beauty, so much light. Don't you wish it was true? An angel took my hand, said you don't have to hurry. Got all the time in the world, don't worry. Don't you wish it was true? Lord, don't you wish it was true? But if tomorrow everybody was your friend, anyone could take you in, no matter what. He said the world's gonna change and it's starting today. There'll be no more armies, no more hate. Don't you wish it was true? Why don't you wish it was true? And all the little children who live happily, they'll be singing in laughter, sweet harmony. Don't you wish it was true? Lord, don't you wish it was true?
she was true. Lord, don't you wish it was true?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. And there's still more government data lost in Great Britain. According to the Telegraph, government officials have halted the transfer of personal data of millions of people after admitting they have lost more computer disks. The Department for Work and Pensions has suspended all data exchanges with local authorities because disks containing details of tax and housing benefit claimants have been mislaid. They were not properly laid. The loss of information, including national insurance numbers, names, addresses, and birth dates, was confirmed in a confidential memo from the local government association. Two local councils. At least 45,000 names and personal details are known to have gone missing from just one council. And the government department admits that more authorities have lost disks. That's the second government department in Britain to admit losing data. Government spokesman said, "We think the disks are still somewhere in the system, but we don't know where." From the Sunday Telegraph, tanning salons face a major crackdown as the government redoubles its efforts to tackle Britain's soaring skin cancer problem. The government is ordering an investigation into the use of tanning booths, with a view to introducing tougher regulations to deter people, particularly teenagers, from using them. Incidences of skin cancer are rising more rapidly in Britain than any other form of disease, despite the fact the sun never shines there. Cases of malignant melanoma, the most dangerous kind, have doubled in 15 years. The investigation will look at how many teenagers are using sunbeds and whether the introduction of coin-operated booths and unsupervised salons mean that so-called tanorexics, people hooked on having a tan, are able to use the facilities with lethal regularity. So specialism, traumatism, and tanorexics. You have built your vocabulary beautifully today, ladies and gentlemen, just by listening to this radio broadcast. Current guidance says under 16 should not be allowed to use tanning beds, but there are no laws backing that advice. In June, a 29-year-old died from skin cancer after using a sunbed twice daily from the age of 14. And finally, from outside the bubble, also from the British newspaper The Telegraph, how's the war affecting their military? We keep hearing some disturbing reports about ours. Well, the Royal Navy can no longer fight a major war because of years of underfunding and cutbacks, a leaked report has revealed. With an under-resourced fleet composed of aging and operationally defective ships, the Navy would struggle even to repeat its role in the Iraq War, and now is far more vulnerable to unexpected shocks, according to the top-level Ministry of Defense document. The report was ordered by the Defense Secretary, who had intended to use it to counter criticism on the state of the Navy in the media. But in a damning conclusion, the report states, quote, "The current material state of the fleet is not good. The Royal Navy would be challenged to mount a medium-scale operation in accordance with current policy against a technologically capable adversary," unquote. The document adds, "The Navy is too thinly stretched. Its fighting capability is being eroded, and the fleet's ability to influence events at the strategic level is under threat." So So the Iraq War has been good for the British Navy as well as... News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet 7.415 megahertz, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on Sirius and XM satellite radio, long may they be separate. Around the world via the internet at two different locations on your computer whenever you want it, live or archived, harryshearer.com, kcrw.com. available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com, unless you have a Nano, in which case it doesn't seem to work all that well. And be just like testing those trailers for formaldehyde fumes, finally. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much, uh-huh. And between now and then, on the video side, check out Dr. Phil's new show on the Harry Shearer channel at mydamnchannel.com. And after you've heard the NPR presidential debate, check out the silent debate. Even more substance. Also at mydamnchannel.com. Or even less substance, I don't know. HarryShearer.com is a place to go for information on the music played on these broadcasts and to email the host. Careful. Host reads it. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.